ebook publishers and marketing services company Just Imagine It, Inc. presents. Get Behind Me, Now Stay There, a new fun-filled, informative podcast available on iTunes and right here locally on KSKQ Ashland, Oregon, 89.5 FM. Art and entertainment news and views. Today's podcast is brought to you by the fine folks at Downpour.com, the one stop for all your audio and digital book needs. Join the Downpour Audiobook Club and save up to 50% on digital downloads, exclusive member-only deals and promotions with no commitment, and you can cancel at any time. Only $14.99 per month, that's Downpour.com. On this episode, Sassy V's song Twittering has social media buzzing. We catch up with Artist to the Stars, David Phillips, and take a listen to a clip from the science fiction audiobook classic, The Cat Who Walks Through Walls, right after the news you want to know.
I'm Charlie Stanton.
I'm Sarah Simerson.
I'm Jerry Renfro.
And I'm Maya Seligman. Here's a look at our top stories in the art and entertainment world. Linda Chorney is the feel-good, do-it-yourself success story of the Grammy Awards. Who the F is Linda Chorney? The 51-year-old singer-songwriter made history by being the first independent artist to get nominated for Best Americana Album in 2012 without a manager, label, or publicist. After 30 years of playing in bars, she joined the Grammy 365 social networking site. The service costs $100 a year and gives independent artists a chance to actively campaign for their albums. Chorney's nomination was a bit controversial, but it also could be considered a feel-good Cinderella story. As Chorney said, "I've had an outcry of letters from people my age who have said, 'What an inspiration this is. I didn't expect to hear that,' which is really beautiful." Her nominated album, Emotional Jukebox, is her sixth one, and it includes 8 original songs, as well as some covers. You want to know who the covers are? Do you know who they are?
We get to guess?
Yeah, guess.
Okay, I'm going to guess the Beatles.
I'll go with the Rolling Stones.
Gotta have Led Zeppelin on there.
Well, you're all right. That's the, all right. Yeah, well, it's true. She covers their songs on this album. And she was competing for the Grammy against Rye Cooter, Emmylou Harris, Lucinda Williams, and Rock and Roll Hall of Fame member Levin Helm, who ended up winning the Grammy. So I really can't wait to see what's in store next.
Well, you know what? For all of you here and our listening audience, I talked to Linda Chorney, and she is going to be a guest on one of our future shows.
Exciting.
Yeah, and... I got to say, I cheated a little bit on that Beatles thing because I knew that was a Beatles song. Yeah. She did.
Yeah.
She did a cover of I'm Only Sleeping. And it's just a great cover. You know, as a matter of fact, let's hear a little bit of it right now.
Please don't wake me. Oh, don't shake me. Leave me where I am. I'm only sleeping. There's
a video of her I saw, and it's an underwater video, and it was shot in Micronesia, and so you can
watch it
on YouTube. Really cool.
Yeah, it's a great video, and the song's called Sink or Swim. So if you guys out there want to hear some great music and see a great video, see Sink or Swim. Mm-hmm. And, you know, speaking of videos, I think Cyrus has a little something he wants to tell us about.
Yeah, Reese Witherspoon, she may not be as attractive as Linda Chorney when I saw her in that video. But she will be starring in Three Little Words for her Walk the Line director, James Mangold. Red Crown is producing the indie film, which will start production in September in Florida. The script, based on the 2008 New York Times bestseller Three Little Words, follows a young Florida girl who gets lost in the child welfare system for 5 years until she's discovered by an unpaid volunteer played by Reese Witherspoon.
Well, that Reese Witherspoon, she's all over the news these days, isn't she?
She is. I mean, she's, what, been in Mud? She was just in Mud?
She was in the movie Mud, although, you know, we'll tell you a little spoiler alert. She's not the star of the movie. She is in it.
I heard that she's also in negotiations for Passengers with Keanu Reeves.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and she's also in negotiations with the judge. She had that incident where her husband got her pulled over for a DUI, and she just thought she had the star power because she told the trooper, she goes, "Don't you know who I am?" And he's like, "Yeah, I do. Let's go." Yeah,
it takes some real talent to get arrested when you're the passenger in a DUI case, you know? It's like usually the passenger's okay, but somehow she managed to get herself arrested.
Yeah. She's talented.
Yeah, she is.
That star power.
That's bringing Stand By Your Man to a whole new level.
Sit By Your Man.
Sit By Your Man, yeah.
Well, she is. She's pretty. I mean, you know, I didn't mean to, you know, knock her down or anything when I was talking about Linda. But this role that she's going to be in, this movie, it sounds pretty powerful, provocative. You know, it's not just, you know, a lighthearted comedy kind of thing. It's something like Angelina Jolie would do. It makes me think of The Changeling or something. So, yeah, we're all going to be looking forward to this movie, Three Little Words. Should be good.
That's great, you know, and I'll really be looking forward to that. But I'll tell you, you know what? Jerry's got a story that just really... it's near and dear to my heart.
Oh, mine too. I loved this movie. The cast of Wayne's World recently reunited. They were doing a photo shoot at an event, and several of them were there. Mike Myers and Dana Carvey.
Excellent.
Yes, excellent. That movie was so good. It was the most interesting thing about it was to find out kind of some of the behind the scenes. A lot of people have heard about the conflict with Myers and Penelope Spheeris, you know, who directed. I mean, the movie was the 8th highest grossing movie of that year, you know, for something that started as a Saturday Night Live skit. That was pretty impressive. But the thing I found the most interesting was the Bohemian Rhapsody lip syncing, where they're saying "Never Let Me Go." That was
right.
Myers loved the idea, but he had a real concern about it because he was quoted as saying he kind of felt like he was taking a whiz on a Picasso. That was his concern. And another really memorable scene actually came about for financial reasons when he goes to try out the new white Fender Stratocaster, and he starts to play "Stairway to Heaven," and the guy stops him. There's a sign, "Yeah, no stairway." Exactly. The reason for that was because of the astronomical cost of using "Stairway to Heaven" in a movie. They had to find a way to do it in, you know, to reference it in under 5 notes. So one of the best movie jokes in a long time was born out of financial necessity.
Interesting story there.
Yeah, so there have been rumors that they're working on a Wayne's World 3.
Swing!
Yes. Wayne and Garth grown up, married with kids. Tia Carrere, Lara Flynn Boyle, Rob Lowe, they've talked to a lot of them about this. And Rob Lowe, interestingly, that was the first comedy that he really did. And he thanked Myers and credited them for really starting his career over again. You know, he's done this run on Parks and Recreation, been wildly successful, and none of that would have come about if it wasn't for Wayne's World.
Yeah, you know what? That is true, because he was more of like of a heartthrob movie star when he first started off.
Yeah, in the 80s, he was part of that.
Like a Pretty
Rat
Boy
pack
thing. Yeah, like a Johnny Depp type of thing.
Exactly.
You know, when Johnny Depp was doing 21 Jump Street.
But he has that really dry sense of humor. You know, makes him a good bad guy without being too bad. I think he's really funny.
I like him in Parks and Recreation.
Yeah, he's great. It's the same like with Christopher Walken. You know, he was known for The Deer Hunter and things like that. But he has a very, very funny comedic side. And, you know, Wayne's World also, there was a lot of, it was that early 90s, a lot of fashion, you know, that came out of it, the ripped jeans and things like that.
It right, and there was a lot of slogans, you know, the excellent party on. Yeah. Of course, you know, I'm sure Cyrus remembers the scene in Wayne's World 2 where he talks with Jim Morrison.
In the desert.
Well, it was really funny looking at the picture from when the cast reunited, because I got to look at the before and after of all these faces, and they look a little different after 20 years.
Yeah, so some of them don't look too different, but...
Wayne does. Wayne, Mike Myers, he looks a lot different than he did.
Yeah. Well, I would think they would want to do a third one, because Myers' career recently, you know, has not been doing that well. The Love Guru was critically panned and was not very successful. So I think it's time.
I forgot that it even happened.
Yeah. I know, I blocked it from my memory too, like being beat up as a kid. You just block it out.
Well, another iconic thing that came out of that movie was powder blue gremlin that they drove around.
Yes. That, oh, with the licorice dispenser in the roof.
That actually, they had that car DJ's video here in Ashland.
No kidding.
Yeah, when it came out on DVD or VHS.
But, you know, it's really kind of strange where people get their influences from and what influences what.
You know, fashion has been influenced by a number of things. And it turns out that the punks of the 1970s sure played a role in fashion. And you probably never thought their t-shirts and bondage trousers and studded leather jackets would be on display in one of the world's most famous art museums. But that is exactly what happened. It's the new exhibition at New York's Metropolitan Museum of Art called Punk, Chaos to Couture.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's on,
What a title.
It is, yeah. And the curator of the exhibit, Andrew Bolton, he says, "Punk was all about celebrating the individual, celebrating creativity and not being afraid, challenging the status quo, to be brave in your self-presentation and to be brave in your fashion statement." And so focusing on the relationship between the punk concept of do-it-yourself and the couture concept of made-to-measure, the show features the materials and techniques of the anti-establishment kind of style. And there are some really wild examples I was looking online, such as Alexander McQueen's coat dress made of black synthetic material imitating trash bags, and a recreation of the graffiti-covered toilet at New York's CBGB punk rock club.
Oh, CBGB. Wow.
Helmut Lung's jacket of patent leather with an aluminum foil and metal bottle caps that was on display. And many other garments incorporating features such as chicken bones, tin studs, ripped denim, horsehair, and safety pins.
The safety pins were big.
Yeah, they were.
Oh, that's right.
You could use safety pins for everything.
Yeah.
You know what? Some of this stuff, you know, it's like I noticed that a lot of it, you know, the Sex Pistols wore.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this is kind of very interesting, just kind of like a little off the beaten path here, but you guys have seen Californication. Did you see it this year?
David Duchovny's show on Showtime.
Yeah, well, you know, the guy who plays Tim Minchin, and we talked about him before.
Yeah,
that played that played a rock star. Well, the guy who's his bodyguard in that Californication, the ex-biker that's his bodyguard, that's the dude from the Sex Pistols.
No way, really?
Yeah, he's the guitar player from the Sex Pistols. I forget his name.
Johnny Rotten?
Not Johnny Rotten. Johnny Rotten was
dead.
Johnny Rotten was the singer.
I can't think of his name.
Steve something or other. I know it starts with a Steve.
Wow, and that's him on Californication?
He plays the bodyguard, the biker.
Wow.
Wow, so Sex Pistols, they're in the modern swing of things because they're also featured in this exhibit here.
Yeah, exactly.
Very interesting.
Well, yeah, when you say punk, I mean, most people, the Sex Pistols is the first thing that comes to mind.
So the Sex Pistols, the Clash.
Yeah, the Clash, Blondie.
Cyrus Emerson.
Right.
Vivian Westwood, who is the fashion designer largely responsible for bringing modern punk into the mainstream, she said, "The best way to confront British society was to be as obscene as possible." So I thought that attitude is certainly celebrated in the unique styles of the show, I think.
Right on.
That's really fun.
And I went to the Sergio Magana workshop, The Obsidian Mirror. You said at the New York's Met Museum, they have an original obsidian mirror from like 2,000 or 3,000 years ago.
With safety pins in it?
With safety pins in it, yeah. So when you're walking around, maybe you'll see that as well.
And black leather.
Well,
that's what the guy's wearing, just looking into it. Yeah, one of the ancient shamans.
You know, we talked a little bit about the the Sex Pistols, the Clash.
Yeah.
You know,
Blondie.
Blondie, you know, the Chili Peppers, you know, all these.
Love Blondie. I really love punk Blondie. Bands. Yeah.
But I know everybody loves Blondie. Come on.
Especially Dagwood.
Yeah, especially. Yeah.
She did the first rap video of all, ever. She's credited with it, yeah.
I don't think Blondie's a real name, though.
Probably not.
She dyes her hair.
Brunetti.
Well, speaking of punks, didn't you just go see the original punks?
I did see the original punks at Oracle Arena. It was the second stop on their tour. Rolling Stones.
Yeah,
the Rolling Stones. Oh. So, I mean, they must have gone through a time machine before kicking off the first show, which is at the Staples Center. And then even carried it over to Oracle Arena in Oakland because, you know, as their 50 and counting tour, Mick Jagger's 69, Keith Richards is 69, Ronnie Wood, the baby, at 65, and Charlie Watts, the old man at 71, who plays the drums throughout, you know, the entire show. quite a workout for someone who's 71. You know, God bless. I mean, the guy's amazing. And they all delivered a rousing set with a kind of youthful energy and musical verve they displayed decades ago. And that was so true when I saw them. Their faces showed their age, but their performance did not, with a nonstop, more than two-hour set packed with well-worn hits. And they did. They played everything. Jumping Jack Flash.
It's gas, gas, gas.
Yeah, you know, and they wore us down. People were getting tired. People in $2,500 seats were sitting up front, started throwing water bottles. They were just exhausted.
Wow.
Whoa. How long was the show?
Close to 3 hours.
Wow.
So you must have got satisfied then.
I was satisfied. and that was another song that he sang.
Really?
Yeah. Going back to the Staples Center, which was the first show on this tour, it was packed to capacity, and, you know, it was the first of the 17 dates. They also played in San Jose, so there's 14 shows left. And the stage is modeled after the band's iconic logo with lips and teeth above the stage and a tongue-shaped platform that extended into the crowd. And, you know, they go and they walk out onto it, and Mick Jagger's doing his, you know, he still got the moves like Jagger.
So, I think all the members are really slim for us, they should write a diet book or something.
You're right about that. I noticed that. I was like, you know, these guys are all in great shape.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah, in fact, I saw a quote from Kate Blanchett, who was mad just how skinny they were. She said it really, really pisses her off.
Yeah, well, they have lots of famous friends. And before the show started, there's a video going on with people like Johnny Depp, Martin Scorsese, Perry Farrell, reminiscing about their favorite tunes. And then Jack Nicholson was in the crowd to kick off the tour. And when he came in to sit down, everybody gave him a big round of applause. And Mick Jagger, of course, fed off of that. He's an amazing showman with charisma. He just makes everybody feel like he's talking to him one-on-one. And so he used the moment to say, it was either us or the Lakers.
Good impersonation.
It was.
I think Nicholson. Nicholson said, "It doesn't matter. I was going to be here either way."
That is so true. So
I think he lives there now.
Yeah. He's got a permanent residence at the Staples Center.
Yeah.
1965 was the first time they played in L.A.
In the '60s, the Rolling Stones. When you think of the '60s, they're one of the. Jack Nicholson too was big in the '60s. Another thing that was going on in the '60s. I think everybody remembers was the Vietnam War was going on during the 1960s. And that brings me to a new documentary that's premiering at the Toronto Hot Docs Film Festival called Unclaimed. It's the story of Special Forces Green Beret Master Sergeant John Hartley Robertson, who was shot down over Laos in 1968 and was long presumed dead. The documentary actually follows fellow Vietnam vet Tom Fonts, who heard about Robertson's whereabouts while he was on a humanitarian mission, and he wants to find him. So the documentary is him trying to track him down. He does track down someone claiming to be Robertson in a remote village in South Central Vietnam, and the man, according to the Toronto Star, is a wiry 76-year-old who trembles with frustration or pounds his forehead when he is unable to remember his birthday or his American children's name. He's only able to speak Vietnamese.
Wow.
That sounds like a fascinating documentary. Huh. It says Robertson was captured by North Vietnam forces and tortured, but eventually escaped. Rather than returning to his wife and children, he stayed in Vietnam and married another woman, assuming the name of her deceased husband. So this guy just disappeared, and now 40 years later, he's been tracked down.
Yeah, they're doing this documentary about it, from Canada, and I was doing some research on that. The U.S. military denies it all.
Right. It's a compelling case, but they're not totally signed off on. Yeah, so this documentary, with all of the things that it brings up and all the emotions involved, is probably going to be very controversial when it premieres.
Yeah, well, speaking of controversy, what would you do when you're an incredibly controversial 26-year-old starlet who's notoriously difficult on movie sets and you want a new job after your court-ordered 90 days in rehab?
I don't know. What would you do?
Well, it's the 21st century, and that only means one thing. You blog about it.
Of course.
You blog. Sources say that Lindsay Lohan will have a gig blogging for the website Celebuzz after her stay at the Betty Ford Center this summer. Her ultimate goal would apparently be to launch her own site with her musings on art and fashion, music, and movies. And frankly, the move doesn't seem too off the mark for the actress, because Loewen definitely considers herself an authority on the arts. Who knew? Yeah. Are you guys familiar with Celebuzz at all?
No, but I am familiar with Lindsay Lohan.
Yes.
Oh, you are. Yeah.
As is everybody in the Western Hemisphere.
It's true.
Yeah.
Well, Celebuzz is a website that actually has a bunch of really high-profile celebrities on their payroll. It counts all of the Kardashians' highly trafficked blogs on its roster, for example. So it's not surprising that they would reach out to an actress like Loewen. And their consultant, a former Gawker editor, states that they are waiting for, quote, the official grooming session regarding Loewen's blog. So he has yet to officially confirm it, but we think it's really fair to say that everyone has high hopes.
Cool. Yeah.
High hopes. Don't you think you would be a true follower? I would be, Charlie.
Yes, I am a true follower of Lindsay Lohan. You know what? In all seriousness, you know, I do think that it's got to be tough on her or anyone that's 26 years old and has, you know, that much pressure put on them, regardless if they're a movie star, they're a writer, they're a factory worker. And can you imagine, you know, getting a DUI at 21 years old and the whole world watches every move you make and, you know, on your probation and your, you know, everywhere you go. I mean, that's got to be like, you know, daunting.
That's what I was going to say. You know, the whole idea of a blog, the funny part about it is like, what else is she going to be able to tell us that we don't already hear? Because she's got paparazzi following her everywhere. Everything she does is well documented. And that's – I can't imagine having everything I do watched.
Well, the cool thing about a blog is that instead of seeing it from the perspective of the press and media, we'd be hearing her take on it, her side. Which
first-person paparazzi.
Which may help her own paparazzi.
Yeah.
And what's even cooler about it is we can either choose to read it or not. I mean, right now, it doesn't matter what your
No, it's platform. Mandatory. Everyone in the United States has to read it.
Right. I didn't know that.
So you're not a choice without that.
You know, put the thing in the classroom every morning. You got to read the blog.
Oh, okay.
But no, that's a good point. You know, getting it may actually help her image, too, because, you know, she was on Letterman, remember, a couple weeks ago before she entered rehab, and she was actually funny and interesting to watch.
I saw her episode with Charlie Sheen, and she was very...
Oh, the anger management. Yeah, she was
really good at that. I mean, the point I was going to make is like, you know, it was twofold. One, that, you know, you could choose to read the blog or not. Right, is right now, you're going to find out about Lindsay Lohan because she's always on the front page
always
of everything.
On the front page of everything.
And two, is that, you know, we kind of lose sight of the fact that, it's, you know, she's a good actress.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know? She is.
She's been a good actress since she was a kid. I mean, you know, I've saw her, you know, since she was a kid. In the movie she did when she was a little kid.
Yeah, and Parent then, Trap.
And, yeah. And then somewhere along the line, she just got caught up like every teenager and, early adult, you know, just with this stuff. Her stuff is just blown out of proportion.
Well, right.
Yeah. And it's become such a part of her that if she writes...
Now she believes
if,
it.
If she just writes about, you know, mundane things, being in the rehab, like, people might not read it. Like, she has to go out, get in a car wreck,
or
and
she might
start
have
a fight to and then write about it.
Or
she's almost got that pressure on her to be outrageous.
Or maybe we want to see her sensitive side on the other hand.
Oh, I want to see her sensitive side. What I was going to say, or maybe she'll come up with something profound to say. Maybe she's a little bit deeper than we give her credit for.
Yeah.
Right. Maybe she's into art.
I'd check it out.
Maybe she's into art.
Yeah, maybe she is into art.
You know, sometimes I'm wondering about things and I'm just like, you know, hey, where can I, you know, find out about some of this stuff? You know, I'm just like, do you know?
I know who knows.
I'm Jerry Renfro and I'm in the know. You know, it seems that every day the world goes faster and faster. You have more computing power in your smartphone than NASA had for the entire space program back in the late 1960s. Everything's getting smaller and more efficient. Cars are getting better gas mileage. Computers have given way to laptops and tablets. But one thing that isn't getting smaller is the American language. Courtesy of UrbanDictionary.com, I present to you some new words and phrases that are a direct result of our computer-driven workaholic society.
You know what? I just got to say this, Jerry. I'm so glad that you're doing this topic because I, for one, have just like, there's so many different symbols and words, new words and stuff like that, that I'm just like, what? I just don't get it.
It seems daily when you're texting or talking with people and you see, like, what does that mean? Like, 15 years ago, the word Google didn't exist. I mean, there was Google as in a Googleplex, but not Google as we know it. Now, it's not only a company, it's a verb, you know, to Google something. And there's even a term called Googleheimers. And that's when you forget what you were going to go Google when you're going from point A to point B. So you're in the garage and you think, oh, I need to look this up. By the time you reach the computer, you've forgotten it. You have Googleheimers.
So do you call me a Googleheimer?
And no, I'm just saying you might have Googleheimers. I've got it. I've had it before. So this one I really love. Evoid. For example, Evoid. You ask a friend, hey, have you gotten a hold of that girl you met at the bar? No, she hasn't responded to any of my text messages, emails, voicemails, tweets, or Facebook friend requests. Frankly, I think she's avoiding me. See, it's like avoid, but avoiding somebody's electronic communications.
This is what you do too, right, Jerry?
I do. I don't check emails or voicemails. So
You're a chronic avoider.
I'm a chronic avoider, yes.
He tries to blame it on being a Googleheimer, but...
it's not Googleheimers. Nope, I just don't like it.
It's by choice.
Here's another one that's similar. Email roulette. Have you guys heard of email roulette? And that's when you're waiting for a really important email to come in and you have your email program open and you continually hit the refresh button hoping you'll catch it right as it comes in. That's playing email roulette.
I haven't heard of that, but it kind of makes sense. You don't want to get back to Jerry's avoidance, what was that term?
Evoidance.
Evoidance.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's running rampant with my children, especially with text is a voice message.
Yes.
When I leave them a voicemail, which is very rarely, I give them the same message all the time. Thank God for caller ID.
That's why I don't even leave voice messages. You know, it's like I want people – I miss the days when you called somebody and they picked up the phone and you just talked. I like that.
I remember when the phone rang when everyone in the house would run for it.
I'll get it.
And you didn't even know who it was. Nowadays, it's like that phone can ring or whatever.
Nobody's touching it.
Not going to do it.
Here's another one for our workaholic society. I suffer from this one too. I have a bioillogical clock. Not a biological clock, a bioillogical clock.
How does that work?
What it is you get so used to waking up at a certain time every day for work, your body wakes you up at that time, even on weekends when you get to sleep in. So even though it's Saturday, body goes, hey, it's 7 a.m., time to get up for work.
That's so illogical to wake up that early on
I know,
Saturday.
Isn't it crazy? Mm-hmm. That's why it's bioillogical. Update day. We've all done it. It's the day when you finally give in. You get so tired of the pop-ups. You spend the whole day updating your Adobe and Java and all of those things. So pretty much no work gets done. It's like a holiday every couple of months where you can't do anything because you're just updating your computer. For all you single ladies out there, the manicorn. I love this one.
What's that?
The manicorn. The manicorn is that elusive man who has a job, pays his bills, is funny, chivalrous, but not chauvinistic, and adventurous, masculine, and artistic at once.
Isn't that guy gay?
No, but I think he already has a girlfriend.
Would he have a relationship via email at least? Maybe an open relationship?
No, because I told you I don't do email. Sorry.
Oh, it's you.
Oh. You see what I did there?
I have to Google him.
And finally, and this happened to a friend of mine, have you guys ever heard the phrase taking a shamecation?
No, I have not.
No.
A shamecation is when someone messes up really, really badly at their job. Not bad enough to get fired, but bad enough that a reprimand is not sufficient. So in that case, they are suspended from work for a period without pay and are forced to take a shamecation.
Don't tell me you've experienced this.
No, it happened to somebody I know, though.
I'm on one right now.
A 20-year shamecation?
Yeah. I think you're on a famecation.
Yeah, I'm on a famecation.
I have one more, too. I'll read it in case you want to edit it in. Okay.
All right.
One more is the term microwave mentality. Have you heard that? It seems we have an entire generation of people that this applies to. Microwave mentality is the belief that if something can't be done easily in 5 minutes or less, it's not worth doing.
Huh.
Microwave mentality.
Yeah, everyone, the instant gratification, attention deficit disorder, and all that plays right into there.
I'm Jerry Renfro, and now you know.
And that's your art and entertainment news. Keep listening for Downpour's special feature. Well, looky here, what do we have? Another pretty thing ready for me to grab. But little does she know that I'm a wolf and she's clubbing, because at the end of the night, it is her I'll be holding. I love you so, hey, that's what you'll say. That's what you'll say. You'll tell me, baby, baby, please don't go away. Don't go away. But when I play, I never stay. So every girl that I meet, yeah, this is what I say. Run away, baby, before I put my spell on you.
From radio personality to singer-songwriter, social media whiz, and more, Sassy V talks about her diverse talents in this interview with Joe Fitzsimmons.
Hi, welcome to another exciting edition of Get Behind Me Now, Stay There. I'm Joe Fitzsimmons, and I'm speaking with Sassy V, who is a singer who has a new CD out now, a new song called I Was Twitterin', which is a great track. And how are you doing, Sassy?
I'm doing great. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing fine. Thanks for asking.
Hey, Sassy, I got to tell you, this is Charlie Stanton, and I heard, you know, I Was Twitterin', you know, and I didn't hear from you, by the way. I heard it on the internet station that I was on, and I was like, dang, this is pretty catchy. So, you know, hats off to you on that. Do you write your own material, or you know, or did somebody write that for you?
I did write that song. I really enjoy songwriting, and I wrote it because just social media is just so popular right now. And I was in my bedroom one day, and I was like, you know, Twitter this, Twitter that, Facebook this, Facebook that. I was like, I need to just write a song about it. And so I was sitting there, and just for a couple of days, this little tune went in my head, and that's how Twitterin' came about.
Well, it's a great song, man. You know what? Let's play a little sample for everybody right now. Yeah, when I Twitterin'.
That's a great track. Sassy, it's interesting what you were saying about, you know, social media and how popular it is. And I noticed in some of your lyrics, you're talking about how you want to hang out with real people.
Right.
Do you find that social media is taking away from hanging out with real people? And
no, I think that people just need to remember that social media is a way to reach out to people. And so when we do, you know, make our friends and stuff, we should also like meet them for coffee too. You know, texting and Twittering and, you know, Facebooking is a great way to meet people. But when it comes down to it, it's made there to socialize. And socializing is, you know, online is our portal for us to meet our friends and then, you know, go hang out with them too. So I think sometimes people forget that.
You know, and that's I didn't mean to cut you off, but that's a great point because I remember at Christmas, this past Christmas, there was a commercial about something along those lines where they were saying, hey, this Christmas you can stay in and like something or you can go out and like something. And they show people going out, you know, and dancing.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting what you said because social media, it can be something that can keep us away. But I find that it's a great way to actually connect with people and to meet people and to get out there and do things with people.
It certainly gets the word out, you know, a lot quicker. It's like, you know, wildfire. And have you found that, you know, why people are drawn to your shows more from the radio, from your CDs, or, you know, from, you know, concerts? Or what's the draw? You know, what brings the people in?
You know, honestly, I've made a lot of you know, like new listeners and people that I've met really through social media, through Twitter, through Facebook. I've met people from all around the world, you know, people from Europe and Italy and Germany and I'm currently working on a project with somebody in Costa Rica and in Mexico. And so social media has really been like really a great place for me to network musically and also, you know, get new, you know, listeners and things like that around the world. Through the internet and through social media. So it's just been a really great, I don't know. It's a nice tool. It's a nice tool. I love it.
It's a nice tool, you know, and, you have the background, you know, I noticed that you've been in radio. So, it was like singing always your passion. And what made you decide to, you know, just like, you know, hey, you know what? I am done setting up mics. I am going to be in front of the mic.
Well, I like doing both ends of things. I like, you know, doing radio and I like doing music. But singing definitely has always been my passion. It's something that I've loved to do ever since I was a little kid. But radio is something I started in before I even like thought about singing. I would just like copy my mom and she used to be a radio personality. And So she was on a radio station in Utah, in Salt Lake City, and I would hear her on the radio, and I was like, oh, yeah, this is so cool. So I'd copy her in my bedroom. I'm like using like tape recorders. Back then it was like tape recorders. So I'm like, stop, record, you know, record. Hey, this is blah, blah, blah. And I'm trying to copy my mom. It was so funny. I wish I could find that stuff. But that's you know, the whole entertainment aspect of things, you know, came, you know, stemmed from, you know, hearing my mom on the radio and you know, being exposed to music and things like that. So, yeah, I like both sides. I like the whole entertainment aspect of it. It's just a big rush for me. I love it.
When you were a small girl, were you like listening to your mom's radio show, jumping around the room with a hairbrush, singing?
Oh, yeah. I totally did that. I jumped on the bed, you know, and did the whole thing. And I make up microphones. It was brushes. It was, you know, hairspray bottles, you know, oatmeal containers, whatever I could. Oh, yeah. Everything that had like any kind of echo sound, you know, McDonald's cups, I'd sing into them to get that little sound.
It sounds like you've always been fascinated with sound. And as a kid playing with a tape recorder, I love that. I was going to ask you about that. And did you always know what you wanted to do? Was this like a driving thing for you your whole life?
You know, I have to say, like, I don't really remember, like, as a small child, like, really having a fascination with music. I think it really grew as I was about in third grade. I think it was, like, 9 years old. And mm-hmm. I had this teacher, and she was a creative writing teacher. And she, you know, really got me into, like, writing. And we started doing, like, haiku and poems. And she, you know, would sing in class, and she'd have us sing. And she kind of got me interested in music. I mean, I always sing at home and stuff, you know, but she kind of pushed me to be in choir because I was like really a shy kid. Believe it or not, people know me now. They're like, yeah, right, you were never shy. But I'm actually still a little bit shy at times. Like I was just a really shy kid. And so my teacher got me into music and writing poems, and then the poems turned into songs. And I, you know, the first time I sang, I really got a rush from it. I loved it so much. It felt so good. It's like, wow, this is like awesome. Uh-huh. So I just, that's kind of where it all got started. Do you
remember your first applause? Was that just like a drug almost? When you got that applause, was it something like, oh yeah, I love this, I want more of this?
Yeah, but you know, my first time singing was really kind of embarrassing, actually.
Really?
Yeah, I sang in high school and you know, all my friends, I used to do drama. I was in drama class, and they like made me, you know, president of drama class, which I was not like an actor by any means. I'm a terrible actor. Like, I think I suck. I hate like looking at myself when I do stuff on video because my eyes go all funny and my eyebrows are doing all weird kinds of things. But I got kind of pushed into, you know, being on stage and stuff just because my friends are like, yeah, just do it. So I'm like, okay. So there was this talent show, and so they psyched me up to do it, and I was practicing so hard at home, and I got myself all, you know, geared up to do it. And then I sang, and then I found out the microphone wasn't on.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I was so freaked out. I was so mad because I really sang my heart out, and I was like, yeah, I could do this, and I did it. And nobody could even hear me because the mic wasn't on. So I had to start over. To make matters worse, they had to like close the curtains and start over. Like, okay, we're going to start over. So they closed the thing, they closed the curtains, and then they had to reopen and put the light on again. It's like, oh no.
Wow.
So it was like terrifying. I'll never ever forget that moment. But afterwards, I felt really good, you know, like getting that applause and stuff. You know, people still clapped for me, and it did feel really awesome. So I kept doing it.
So, you know what? Walk me through a Sassy B concert. We go to see you live. What kind of show are we going to see? What are we going to see? What can we expect? And what can all of our listeners expect in the San Diego area? They're going to go out and see you.
Oh, they'll expect, I don't know, all kinds of feelings. You'll feel some excitement and some fun. You'll dance a little bit. And then I might get a little, you know, serious on you a little bit, but fun, you know, kind of like a rebel type attitude. Like, yeah, like, ever had anybody do this to you before? Like, yeah, you know how it feels, you know.
that sounds like in your face art. That's good.
Yeah, and yeah. Just, you know, and I'm a really silly person. So it's you know, when I get on stage, I it's not any different than if you're hanging out with me. You just don't ever know what I'll do. I had a friend tell me that my last performance, one of the producers I was working with, his name is Cocky, and he told me, he said, "You do this like thing with your foot, and you do this thing," and I'm like, "What, really?" So I was watching this. Oh my God, I didn't even realize I did that. But I just like to have fun and have a good time, and I never know what's going to come out, or I don't care if I dance like a total nerd. I just have fun. Mm-hmm. With it, and I hope that everybody else is having fun while I'm having fun. So,
well, listening to your music, I can definitely tell that you're having a lot of fun with it, and I'm amazed at how much variation, what a wide range you have.
We want to ask you about your Jack in the Box.
Oh, yeah. Oh my God!
Oh yeah! Oh my God! That's right. Tell me about it.
I love it. You guys are awesome. That's great.
You are awesome, Sassy.
Oh my God! I love. I told you, like, I have my silly side. So every once in a while I will, you know, I'll something that entertains me, like a commercial that I see all the time or whatever. Uh-huh. Sometimes I'll make a little parody version of my own version of
uh-huh. Well, for the video. For our listening audience out there, maybe Joe can describe the video for us.
Sassy, you can't tell right now, but I'm blushing big time. Oh my face God. Is on fire. Yeah, it was this great video of Jack in the Box, and you're eating a hamburger. And it actually ties into something else I was going to ask you about, because you're okay. Speaking about body image, and you were doing a book with someone, I can't remember his name, but you were talking, he was doing a book about body image and having a positive body image and positive conception of yourself. That's a really powerful message. Do you want to speak to
it? You know, when I'm thinking about body image and stuff like that, I'm always thinking Jack in the Box myself.
Yeah. You think about Jack?
I do. I think about Jack and the incredible cone shape head he is. And
Jack in the Box.
Jack in the Box, yeah. He makes great commercials. And, you know, your parody was just like, you know, I'll describe it. You know, you're having a hamburger there out there. And why don't you give us the tagline that you used?
I don't remember. I seriously
Oh, I think we do.
What did I say? I don't remember what I said.
Oh, yeah. You said something about someone named Andrea. And then you said, you know, I'm a singer and I've got a nice rack. Who needs anything more?
That's great. I love it. You guys are awesome. I love it. You guys are so much fun. Have a great night. Right. Thanks, guys.
All right, good night.
Thank you.
Good night. Bye-bye.
Bye.
To learn more about Sassy V, visit us on our website at justimagineitinc.com.
Phillips may have changed his approach to art, yet he's still the same likable guy. He caught up with the president of Just Imagine It, Inc., Charlie Stanton, in this interview.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another exciting interview on Get Behind Me, Not Stay There. Today, we are very pleased and honored to have with us David Phillips from Venice Beach, California. Artist to the stars is what we like to call him. How you doing, David?
Doing very well, Charlie. How you doing?
Pretty good. How's it been going out there? We haven't talked to you in about a year now?
Yeah, it's been about a year. It's going really well, man. A lot of things, a lot of new projects and a lot of new works, and it's going very well.
So what have you been up to then?
Well, I changed my style, I guess the entire method of making artwork. I really kind of took all of the different facets of making art, like drawing, photography, collage, painting, and just kind of discovered a way to piece them all together to make one composition. So that's what I've been working on as of late, and I guess the best way to describe them are mixed media pieces, and they've been really successful for me and a lot of fun.
Yeah, you know, I saw the one you did called Ready to Give.
Yes.
Yeah, and you know, that's a it's really cool. I really like it a lot. You know, and I saw it, and I was like, wow, you know, we've got to put this up on David's page. David's on our justimagineitinc.com on the artist page. He's a feature artist for all of our listeners out there who want to check out his work. And also, when you click on either any of the paintings or David himself, it will take you to your web presence, which I believe is Wino Strut, correct?
Yes, correct.
Cool. So, you know, tell me about this Ready to Give, and where else can we find other pieces like this?
Well, that particular piece, I started working with old pornography images, like Penthouse and Playboys from the 60s and 70s, and using those as source images, and then applying painting techniques and drawing techniques and photography techniques to the base image. I guess it kind of started from my Future Bird video. For that video, I worked with actual 60s and 70s video of pornography. And for the actual pieces of art now, I reverted to print rather than the video. So that's sort of the explanation behind that. And that particular piece was pulled from a commission that I did recently after showing with Mocha.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, the Future Birds video is always near and dear to my heart. I love that video. That was my first introduction to the band. You know, I'd heard them in San Diego. And
yeah.
So I looked up, you know, on YouTube to see, you know, if they had any videos. And they had one of them doing that song. And then there was your video. And I was like, wow, this is night and day. Congratulations to you, you know?
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I mean, you know, I had creative control on it, so I figured I might as well make it as trippy as possible and as unique as possible.
You know, it's curious because, you know, as I look at some of these paintings, like Ready to Give, for example, that we've been talking about, you know, you were saying, you know, well, I used some pornographic images, you know, from Penthouse and Playboy and stuff like that, and you look at some of the images and by today's standard, this is so tame. It almost could be you know, Beach Banco Bingo model, you know?
Yeah, I typically cut out the naughty parts as well. But it's really just a vintage image or a retro image and put it in a contemporary spotlight and sort of reimagining it as the progression of technology and the art world and everything is moving along. Sort of showcases on par with what's happening currently.
So what is happening currently?
There's a lot of different things, I think, in the art world. It's a really exciting place right now, and a frightening place, too, because the playing field is definitely even, and just about anyone with a laptop and a website can become an artist. But there is that, and then I think in the gallery setting and, you know, with auctions, things like that. There's a lot of, I would definitely think mixed media pieces are very popular right now. There's so many different technologies, so many different styles of making an image or a composition that people are really showcasing their skills. You know, for instance, if they're really good at, you know, photography, you don't just have to use a base, you know, photograph that you took yourself. You can do the photography and you can paint on top of it, or you can do half painting, half photography, and then you can take a digital thing that you made on your computer and add that element. And so it's really just making every single different avenue that art can be created and put it into one, you know, final image. So I think that's really a good thing and a neat showcase for art.
Well, you know, I would kind of agree with you on you know, one aspect of that. You know, anyone with a computer or you know, iPad or whatever has all this, you know, versatility in this media at their fingertips, and they can create art and movies and music and whatnot. But I have seen some of your work that is very contemporary, like portraits and things that you have done. You know, and then I've seen, you know, like, you know, a lot of your newer work is just like, you know, very. you know, just abstract and bizarre. And what I was wondering, what I'm leading to is, like, where do you come up with all these cool ideas? Because I see stuff that, you know, that you work on. We went back and did some research, and when we you know, made contact to interview you, and I was looking at some of your new stuff, and I go, where does this guy come up with this stuff all the time? It's just like out of this world.
I don't know. I mean, you know, I really don't question that part of it. You know, I might be a little afraid to. I just sort of move forward with it, and every technique that develops, whether it be, you know, photorealism painting or geometric painting or mixed media or any sort of video work even, I sort of just borrow from each one and try and sort of culminate it, make it into my own, I guess, style or vision, and just move forward with that.
Is there any particular media that you enjoy working in more? I mean, do you like working with oils, video?
Yeah, if I could do one all day, every day, it would definitely be oil painting, for sure. That's what I started on, and that's what I always go back to. And it's the most fun for me. Unfortunately, you know, it's very time consuming, take a very long time to dry, very expensive, and it's a very real concern come into play when, you know, you're an artist and a businessman, and a man, unfortunately, you have to make other decisions.
Right, right. Well, you know, that almost, you know, comes with any artist has to struggle for their art, as they say.
Oh, sure. You definitely are going to struggle with you make that decision to go down that route.
You know, I just kind of thought of stories out there. Interviewed this guy in Bulgaria, John Dodds, and he written a book called Bone Machines. And the thing that caught me when I first, you know, heard his book, because we ended up publishing it, was his first line in his book was, "They suffer for his art." And I was like, wow, that is so, you know, like, it just grabs you, right? And maybe we wanted to investigate what the book was all about. And the book was about a guy that was a painter who was also a part-time serial killer. So, you know.
Oh, cool. Yeah, any artist is going to go through a massive amount of struggle. And I think a lot of art does come from struggle and from difficulty and, you know, painful place, which doesn't necessarily make it a depressing or sad thing. I think that showcasing those feelings and that is an actual happy thing and a productive thing, rather than, you know, having that sort of thing sit inside of an artist. That would not be a very wise decision.
Well, do you find it true that art is like a reflection of society at the present time?
I think to an extent it is, sure. Going back to the technology thing, I think since there is such instant access to any form of technology now, I definitely think art has reflected that in society. And you know, there's full-time political artists who their daily bread comes from the hot topic of politics and what's going on in very mainstream, very instant society. So there's definitely a correlation between that and art.
I saw some of your video work that you did before Bill Baird, and it is so cool. You know, I mean, it's just like, you know, I was thinking as you were explaining that, you know, not all of your art comes from suffering, you know, because some of this stuff is just not, it's just downright, you know, pleasant. I mean, it's just like, you get a, you know, a feel good is even a kind of a not even descriptive term for it. It's just like, you know, you see the video or you see the artwork, and you're like, dang, I feel good, you know?
Yeah, well, a lot of times Bill's music will, you know, make me feel pretty good. I think he's, you know, a really super talented musician, like on a scale that we'll probably won't understand until much later. So when I was introduced to his music and then later introduced to him, it was a great thrill for me. And then for him to allow me to do any sort of video to any music he made, it was a great collaboration. And we've been working on a lot of little fun projects. We'll see where those go here later.
Okay, yeah, he's a. You're right. He is a really good musician, and you guys, when you guys work together, it's just, you know, it's just so phenomenal. Surreal is the word that comes to mind when I watch your stuff. You know, it's just like, you know, so cool. You know, and I really strongly recommend all of our listeners out there check out some of the video work that you've done with Bill and with Future Birds and with Dios and other artists. You can, that's all available on YouTube, correct?
Yes, YouTube and Vimeo. Either, you know, your site at Just Imagine Me or mine, Wanna Stress, there's multiple going to all.
All right, we've been talking today with artist David Phillips from Venice Beach, California. It was so good to touch base with you again, David, and all the new exciting things that you have going on with your mixed media. We want to tell everybody there that you can go to Rhino Strut Nation, and you can also go to justimagineinc.com where David Phillips is the featured artist, and there will be links to all of his sites, Facebook, his new Wino Strut store, and of course his blog. David, thank you so much for being on.
Thank you, Charlie. I appreciate it. It's fun.
To learn more about David Phillips, visit us on our website at justimagineinc.com.
Robert A. Heinlein has written some of the best-selling science fiction novels of all time, including the beloved classic Stranger in a Strange Land. Now, in The Cat Who Walks Through Walls, winner of the Audiophile Earphones Award, Heinlein creates his most compelling character ever, Dr. Richard Ames, ex-military man, sometime writer, and unfortunate victim of mistaken identity. Dialogue as witty as Oscar Wilde's, action as rollicking as Edgar Rice Burroughs, and satire as spicy as Jonathan Swift's. The New York Times.
My lovely bride stared at me. You would kill a man for bad manners? Do you know of a better reason? Would you have me ignore rude behavior? No, but I can understand executing a man for murder. I'm not opposed to capital punishment. But shouldn't you leave this to the proctors and the management? Why must you take the law into your own hands? Gwen, I haven't made myself clear. My purpose is not to punish, but to weed, plus the aesthetic satisfaction of retaliation for boorish behavior. This unknown killer may have had excellent reasons for killing the person who called himself Schultz, but killing in the presence of people who are eating is as offensive as public quarreling by married couples. Then this oaf capped his offense by doing this while his victim was my guest, which made retaliation both my obligation and my privilege. I went on. The putative offense of murder is not my concern, but as for proctors and the management taking care of that matter, do you know of any regulation forbidding murder? What? Richard, there must be one. I've never heard of one. I suppose the manager might construe murder as a violation of the golden rule. Well, I would certainly think so. You do? I'm never certain what the manager will think. But Gwen, my darling, killing is not necessarily murder. In fact, it often is not. If this killing ever comes to the manager's attention, he may decide that it was justifiable homicide, an offense against manners, but not against morals. But, I continued, turning back to the terminal, the manager may have already settled the matter, so let's see what the Herald has to say about it. I punched up the newspaper again, this time keying for today's index, then selecting today's vital statistics. The first item to roll past was Marriage, Ames, Novak. So I stopped it, punched for amplification, keyed for printout, tore it off, and handed it to my bride. Send that to your grandchildren to prove that Granny is no longer living in sin. Thank you, darling. You're so gallant, I think. I can cook, too. I scrolled on down to the obituaries. I usually read the obituaries first, as there is always the happy chance that one of them will make my day. But not today. No name I recognized, especially no Schultz, no unidentified stranger, no death in a popular restaurant. Nothing but the usual sad list of strangers, dead from natural causes and one by accident. So I keyed for general news of the habitat, let it scroll past. Nothing. Oh, there were endless items of routine events, from ship's arrivals and departures to the biggest news, an announcement that the newest edition, rings 130 to 140, was being brought up to spin, and, if all went by schedule, would be warped in and its welding to the main cylinder started by 0800 on the 6th. But there was nothing about Schultz, no mention of any Tolliver or Taliaferro, no unidentified cadaver. I consulted the paper's index again, punched for next Sunday's schedule of events, found that the only thing scheduled for noon Sunday was a panel discussion assembled by Hollow from The Hague, Tokyo, Luna City, L4, Golden Rule, Tel Aviv, and Agra. Crisis in Faith, the Modern World at the Crossroads. The co-moderators were the president of the Humanist Society and the Dalai Lama. I wished them luck. So far we have zip, zero, nit, zwabo, and nothing. Gwen, what is a polite way for me to ask strangers how they pronounce their names?
Let me try it, dear. I'll say, Ms. Tolliver, this is Gloria Meade Calhoun from Savannah. Do you have a cousin, Stacy May, from Charleston?
When she corrects my pronunciation of her name, I apologize and switch off. But if she or he accepts the short form but denies knowing Stacy May, I say,
I wondered about that. She said it, Taliaferro, but I knew that was wrong.
What then, Richard? Work it up into a date or switch off by accident? Make a date, if possible.
A date for you or for me?
For you, and then I'll go with you, or keep the date in your place. But I must first buy a hat.
A hat?
One of those funny boxes you sit on the flat part of your head, or would if you were dirtside. I know what a hat is, but I was born dirtside same as you were, but I doubt if a hat has ever been seen off Earth. Where would you buy one? I don't know, best girl, but I can tell you why I need one. So that I can tip my hat politely and say, Sir or Madam, pray tell me why someone wishes you dead by noon Sunday. Gwen, this has been worrying me, how to open such a discussion. There are accepted polite modes for almost any inquiry, from proposing adultery to a previously chaste wife, to soliciting a bribe. But how does one open this subject?
Can't you just say, don't look now, but somebody's trying to kill you?
Tom Weiner's performance is particularly strong with the two main characters. Their banter becomes clever enough to challenge even Clark Gable and Claudette Colbert to a literary duel, says Audiophile. Robert A. Heinlein, 1907 to 1988, was born in Missouri. He served 5 years in the U.S. Navy, then studied mathematics and physics at the Graduate School of UCLA, took a variety of jobs, and owned a silver mine before beginning to write science fiction in 1939. His novels have won the Hugo Award, and in 1975, he received the first Grandmaster Nebula Award for Lifetime Achievement. For more information about top-selling titles from this award-winning company, go to downpour.com.
Behind Me Now, Stay There is a Just Imagine It Inc. presentation and was recorded in the Blackstone Audio Inc. studios in Ashland, Oregon. If you would like more information about this show, or if you or someone you know would like to be featured, please call 541-708-0525 or visit justimagineitinc.com. I'm Maya Seligman.
I'm Jerry Renfro.
I'm Sarah Simerson.
And I'm Charlie Stanton, and we like you, so be sure to like us on Facebook and remember to get behind me.
Now stay there.
Let me put you in the picture. Let me show you what I mean. The Messiah is my sister. Ain't no king, man, she's my queen. Let me put you in the picture. Let me show you what I mean. The Messiah is my sister. Ain't no king, man, she's my queen. I had a dream and see the light. Don't put it out, but she's alright.
right here, she's my sister.